Welcome to the Dow of Sports Podcast with Troy Kirby, covering sports business with over 300 industry leaders from across the globe. Now, here is your host, Troy Kirby.
Thank you for listening to the Dow of Sports Podcast. I'm Troy Kirby, along with episode 711 of the podcast. Today's guest is a returning guest. He was on episode 505 of the podcast. That is James DeMeo. Now, James is a sports security expert. He wants to talk about Rio and the Olympic Games. We talk about really how strategic security should be at some of these high-level events, then get into the weeds in terms of what college football should look like, especially as alcohol starts to become more and more of a accepted practice there, as well as just in terms of ensuring the entire safety of every single fan in the building. Great conversation with James DeMeo right here in episode 711 of the Dow of Sports.
Want to spread the word about the Dow of Sports podcast? Please like an episode and share it on your Facebook or Twitter. You can even rate and review the podcast in iTunes, which helps us gain new fans by moving up in the iTunes rankings. Some sports executives are also sending the link to the podcast to their coworkers for a listen. Every little bit helps, and the Dow of Sports podcast thanks you for your efforts.
James, thank you very much for coming back to the podcast. You are on episode 505, and we talked then about security, but now we've actually had the Rio Olympics happen. What were some of the facets of actually going through the Olympic Games in Rio, which I guess if I were to kind of break it down, usually it's the higher hills have, the most, the richest, wealthiest people in a country, and the lower down below is where it's not necessarily, the nicest. And it's actually the opposite in Rio. So it makes it harder to kind of detect where the wrong elements are because you have to actually go up in the hills to find them.
Well, Troy, again, thank you for the opportunity to have a most important conversation. Certainly, when we look at safeguarding today's mega events, certainly the world we live in, Troy, is much more complicated, and the challenges continue for all of us on a daily basis. But looking at, Rio and the amount of personnel and training and education and resources that went into such a massive endeavor, at the end of the day, thankfully, things turned out for the best. So I always like to talk about, bringing your A-plus game to the venue, stadium, and arena. And if we look at, obviously, the aftermath of the Paris bombing, certainly the guard there had about 10 years experience in security. But, just having the situational awareness to be paying attention to everything that's going around you really is part and parcel to just continuing, training and education and, obviously all types of proactive risk mitigation to keep people safe. So certainly Rio teaches us lessons on things that we're doing right. And as we move forward, college football and mega events, and if it's not NCAA March Madness, when we're dealing with such large groups of people in confined spaces, as I talk about, the challenges for all of us, Troy, to certainly share information and continue to learn our lessons on the things that we're doing, better, certainly, and improving upon, I think places us all in a really good position to keep everybody safe within the space.
Usually in the United States, when we talk security, we only have one, two, maybe three languages that people speak. Normally, English, Spanish would probably be the primaries of possibly moving people through at security. But in this case, when you have the Olympic Games, you have a multitude of languages. You probably have about 300. How exactly do you coordinate when the public may or may not understand what you're saying based on their home country might be participating, and that may not be anywhere near Rio?
You're absolutely right. It's a terrific question. And certainly, doing the research and training beforehand, I think it's so important to make sure that, I always talk about everyone speaking the same language, but, as per your question, the ability to have, certain ambassadors relaying the information through different, languages. And making sure that everybody understands exactly what they need to do, whether it's the fans in terms of, the behaviors, the tolerated behaviors within the space, and certainly with the first responders. Those language barriers can be challenging, and certainly the magnitude of the Rio Olympics, we've seen the importance of nations coming together and sharing information, you know, in the interest of public safety. I think it's so important that we do all that work, all of our homework in advance to make sure that we have those key personnel folks in place to make sure that we're translating information correctly and coherently to obviously protect everyone in the space.
What's amazing about the Rio Games is something that happened kind of outside of it, which was an international incident with the swimmer Ryan Lochte, who he and some other swimmers had, you know, maybe torn a poster off the wall, etc. But because of the language barriers, they couldn't understand the security. And because they were away from Olympic Village, they were almost in no man's land in terms of having any type of interpretation. Is that also a concern as you go in through security of making sure that not only do the people know which country they're in, i.e. these aren't the same laws that perhaps you're used to, but also making sure that they're not out there in a sense away from Olympic Village where, you know, anything and everything can happen because you have to secure two areas and one of them is more of a residence than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly the IOC has done a good job with trying to, you know, get that and push that message out beforehand. But, you know, every 3 or 4 years we go back to, you know, having another Olympics and certainly lessons learned. But yeah, it's certainly, you know, knowing what to do inside the village, knowing what precautions to take when you leave the village, whether it's being prepped by, you know, the FBI or State Department or certainly the IOC or the security folks in Rio, sharing that information with the team leaders from each nation that they understand, you know, what safety precautions are, you know, need to be in place for the safety of the athletes. Because certainly the last thing we want is anyone getting kidnapped or any type of, you know, situation that's going to further someone's cause for their own personal reasons. So, you know, thankfully, you know, we didn't really have those type of situations. I think everything was in place that needed to be put in place. You know, 80,000, you know, strong, some question whether or not that was enough, but, you know, we have another 3 or 4 years to kind of look back at Rio, Troy, and see, you know, what we can do to improve upon the next Olympic Games that comes to pass.
Do we worry as much about terrorism in sporting events as people like to think? Because I haven't seen as much terrorism, you know, precautions in the sense that we haven't had bombs go off. I mean, I guess the only thing close would be the Paris shootings, and they happen to be close to a sporting event, and I think they might have almost entered one of the, you know, soccer stadiums, but it wasn't like a big bomb or something that was meant to take out the mass amount of people. Are we over-precautioning on things that just aren't feasible in terms of what terrorists are going to target?
Well, again, a terrific question, Troy, and we're seeing now certainly what came out of New York City this past weekend and the 5K marathon, a race in New Jersey, whether it's a soft target or a hard target, which could be a stadium venue or arena. I think the threat of terrorism or anarchist groups is real. And certainly the FBI put out information regarding ISIS and stadiums. So it's something that certainly we shouldn't be fearful of, but through training, education, the integration of technology within the space, sharing information, I think it places us in a position of strength to try to best mitigate those potential risks. So it is concerning. The world is ever changing. The challenges do continue on a daily basis, but at the end of the day, if we're, you know, obviously, you know, doing everything that we can to learn our lessons and move forward, it places us, again, in a position to do everything we can to keep folks safe within the vertical.
I'm always amazed at how people are unwilling to do basic things in order to, you know, get into a stadium. NFL has always had this practice the last few years of, you know, you just can't bring like a laptop in. You can't bring a bunch of different stuff in. And yet you'll see people trying to bring big devices in that have nothing to do with sitting down at the stadium. Is that really part of the problem? Is we're unwilling to try to be, you know, secure enough that we cause some problems at security, and we really don't want to be inconvenienced more than we want to be protected?
Well, you know, and again, that's that double-edged sword of not creating a, you know, a police state by, you know, being overzealous, and that's trying to find that delicate balance between creating a memorable fan experience for the 2.5 to 3 hours, and also creating a safe environment. So I think, you know, certainly there will be some folks that, that really don't want to comply for whatever reasons. But I think, you know, within the space, if we can push the message out in advance, Troy, to educate everyone on, you know, what is to be tolerated when they come out to the ballpark, pushing that message out through social media, through codes of conduct, through, professional sports and different websites to let everybody know that we're all in this together and that we want everyone to have an amazing experience. But just because of the troubling times that we live in, these are just the necessary procedures and protocols that we all have to kind of buy into so that we can be safe while we're enjoying this amazing experience. And I think that's the challenge that certainly security has. That's the challenge that, the marketers have, creating that amazing game day experience. Because, as you know, I mean, there's certainly the smart television, home TV kind of, experience. But certainly technology, and we mentioned this on the first podcast with the Golden State Warriors, you know, iBeacon technology, but certainly that creativity and connectivity for the fan through apps and whatnot creates that amazing experience. But the last thing we want from a security safety standpoint is any type of, you know, adverse situation where folks really will feel unsafe and won't want to come back out to the ballpark. That's the last thing we want. So certainly doing everything we can to make it amazing without certainly being, you know, overzealous. That's our challenge in the industry.
So we had some interesting things happen this summer that I kind of wondered what your thoughts would be on. One of them was the Minnesota Lynx. They decided, the basketball, women's basketball team decided that they were going to wear Black Lives Matter shirt at practice, and then, you know, or shoot around. And then Colin Kaepernick not standing for the national anthem. Now, and then also having some socks, which, you know, had some kind of degrading things possibly towards police officers. I'm not debating whether or not they have the right to protest. I'm not debating those at all. But in both instances, the police forces for both Minnesota and, you know, really for San Francisco, were talking about not enforcing or not being, you know, providing some type of security measures for those venues because they were upset. My question is, does that put, you know, protests as a difference maker and possibly endangering the lives of every fan because you might have your entire security force quit on you?
Again, another terrific question and certainly a sign of the times. And, you know, we would hope that the police unions and the ownership groups get on the same page. And, you know, a lot of those officers are working overtime to work those particular events. And the last thing we really want to have is not having a contract to law enforcement contingent with inside, you know, the inner perimeter of a stadium venue or arena. We certainly want law enforcement to be able to enforce the laws if necessary. But it's a conversation that continues on a daily basis, and there's obviously, you know, two sides of the coin to it. But ultimately, you know, and again, being prior law enforcement, I know what it's like to work a concert detail for my old police department on Long Island. And certainly 5 years later after retiring, the world of policing has changed and the job has become that much more difficult because, you know, as I mentioned, the world we live in is that much more complicated. So certainly if we can just make sure that, you know, people do have, as you mentioned, the right to protest and do things peacefully, but certainly we'd like to see the officers out there working with guest services, working with security, working with the ushers, having that friendly, rapport with the fans. I think that's so important to let the fans know that the officers are there for their safety. That's not, you know, we're all on the same team trying to just enjoy the experience. And the last thing we really want, again, as I mentioned earlier, is any type of situation where if we didn't have a strong enough police contingent detail at that stadium that, you know, lives could be at risk. That's certainly the last thing we want in any type of scenario in that situation.
Well, I always find police work to be, you know, especially on the beat stuff, to be almost a weird dichotomy because at the beginning part, if you're just enforcing the law or you're coming upon somebody, you're usually encountering them on their worst day possible. That's what you're getting, worst day possible. Mm-hmm. But then also in the stadium, you're seen as possibly an impediment because they want to just go have fun, not follow the rules. What is really the best protocol for an officer, whether they're, you know, off duty or receiving overtime, to be able to handle some of, you know, whether it's fans or, you know, just general people, you know, kind of dealing with trying to get into a venue because of the fact they just don't want to have to deal with, you know, somebody telling them something, even though that person's trying to keep them safe.
Exactly. And it's a very interesting dichotomy, as you mentioned. And, you know, again, you know, opening up the Barclays Center a few years back with AEG, you know, having the ability to connect with the first responders, NYPD, MTA, you know, a lot of the officers came up to me because they knew I was retired law enforcement. So I was a good liaison for the manager and the first responders. But I think it's important also that the officers that are part of that detail, you know, certainly take it upon themselves to go and meet the security directors and stadium managers, to do walkthroughs, to understand, you know, the physical layout, to understand that everyone needs to speak the same language, to be part of these pre-event. As we talked about, we're long past the days, Troy, of having those 5-minute huddles, right? We talked about that with the Yellow Jackets. But certainly, you know, law enforcement, you know, just, you know, trying to become more familiarized, you know, with that confined space, because a lot of the officers may not work that particular detail, you know, all year long. They may just be contracted for a particular NFL game on that particular Sunday. So certainly, you know, getting out to the stadium a little bit ahead of time and finding out who's running the detail, meeting some of the guest services and security officers that are with the ownership groups, and just getting to know kind of a face to a name, and making sure that everybody understands, you know, what they need to do in times of crisis. And I've always talked about, certainly, you know, the gatekeepers. We talked about security and guest services, you know, understanding what their role is, and understanding collectively to cross-train in terms of what their responsibilities are. But at the end of the day, I think it's real important that people understand that, you know, everybody wants to be treated with dignity and respect. And I think if it's law enforcement, if it's, you know, the gatekeepers, if those folks can be in charge of their verbal communication skills to treat people with dignity and respect and de-escalate situations to the best of their ability without obviously escalating situations, I think that places everybody, including the ownership groups, in a position of strength to do obviously what's in the best interest of everybody in the space. So certainly that's, you know, some of the training that I've had in terms of, you know, verbal communication skills, and just, you know, as the fans come in, greeting them with dignity and respect, thanking them for coming down. You know, I remember working at the Barclays Center and guest services literally high-fiving the fans on the way out. And win, lose, or draw, the, you know, if you're at a Brooklyn Nets game, if somebody, you know, high-fived you on the way out, they made you feel really good, and the likelihood is you were going to come back again. And I think that's the same thing with law enforcement, is just, you know, monitoring the situation, you know, developing that rapport with the fans, and just trying to, you know, obviously treat folks with dignity and respect. And certainly the fans buying into the idea and the mantra that the officers are there to help them in times of crisis, to you know, give them directions or whatnot. But everybody working together, Troy, I think that's the key, working together in spite of all these challenges, because the last thing we want, again, is any type of situation, a bomb scare, a drone, you know, an active shooter type of a situation, workplace violence. That's the last thing we want within a densely populated area, a confined space, as they talk about. And I think if we all just, you know, treat each other with dignity and respect and work together, everybody wins within the space.
So one of the aspects that's now come about is college football, which has always been a tradition, has now started to see some of the, you know, football facilities allow alcohol. And this is a little different than, say, the pro model, because you do have younger people in the mix. So you do have the propensity for possibly overdrinking. It's a different tailgate culture, I think, than even the NFL has, because you have student bodies that are collectively there. How do you brace for that now if you're a security person? Because you're going to have a lot of young people who are absolutely inebriated, and some of this can become a health issue to where, you know, they're doing it even underage.
Great question. Certainly, University of Texas, when Steve Patterson first came in, obviously they started selling alcohol at UT games, and certainly it's a win-win for the university in terms of generated revenue. But the other side of it too is training your staff to look for signs of intoxication. I think that's so important to have your alcohol beverage control folks work with your guest services and security folks, and certainly the student volunteers to go over, you know, different signs of, you know, someone who has obviously, you know, had too much to drink, the ability of law enforcement and certainly security working the exterior perimeters, making sure the tailgating, you know, if it is permissible on that particular college campus, to be done responsibly. Because you and I both know, Troy, if somebody's been drinking for 4 or 5 hours and now they've entered, you know, an 80,000 patron stadium, it's going to be challenging to deal with that person for another 2 or 3 hours. So, you know, again, we talk about duty of care. So certainly you take upon that duty of care if you allow someone to come into the stadium and, you know, obviously they've had too much to drink. So I certainly like to talk about, you know, focusing on inner perimeters in terms of education and looking for signs, and certainly the exterior parking lots to make sure that, you know, things are done responsibly. But it's kind of that double-edged sword where, you know, again, the universities are making, you know, a cash windfall, but they also have to manage the risk mitigation side of the liabilities that go along with slips, trips, and falls and certain, you know, fan violence situations. And we talked about the ability to understand crowd dynamics and certainly crowd control and understanding the demographics of the crowd that you're going to attract to your stadium, venue, and arena before they come out to the ballpark, understanding that and doing that research to know, again, what you're going to have to handle for those 2.5 to 3 hours, you know, that they're, you know, at your stadium.
Does it require campus police to be really involved, seeing as how they usually understand the culture of the school overall, to really kind of make sure that those security measures are done with the right format and, I guess, the right protocols to what really the culture wants there at that campus?
I think it's a huge responsibility of campus law enforcement to certainly, you know, again, get out to the stadium and talk to the directors and managers and ushers and student volunteer staff to make sure that, you know, everybody knows who to turn to. But yeah, I think it's something that's incumbent upon them to protect that space. But, you know, again, I think the education and the sharing of knowledge, Troy, is monumental in doing everything you can to, you know, obviously make it a safe event. So it's a great question, and I think certainly, again, law enforcement should be out there, be active, and, you know, certainly working with the students and making sure that the students understand that the officers are there to help them and keep them safe.
What are some of the problem areas or glaring errors that, you know, really venues have that really haven't been shored up to this point? Are there any type of areas that, you know, frankly, you see and kind of say, okay, that needs to be fixed?
Well, certainly, you know, doing a threat and vulnerability assessment of your stadium, venue, arena is really important. You know, the tragedy that came out of Pulse, it was a softer target. They only had one, you know, contracted guard there. And, you know, so we're seeing now with the softer targets that they're more vulnerable. I think, again, as I mentioned in the first podcast, that the NFL does a terrific job of protecting the inner perimeters. But I'm concerned about, you know, those exterior perimeter, those entertainment zones, as we talked about, right, with March Madness and, you know, the parking lots to look for, again, you know, drug sales or ticket scalping or anything that could be possibly, you know, detrimental to people within the space. You know, our work continues on a daily basis, Troy. I think that, you know, when we do these threat and vulnerability assessments, we see where our strengths and where our weaknesses are. Certainly cybersecurity is another area that we need to tap into in terms of any type of, you know, challenges to the infrastructure of a stadium, venue, arena. Drones is another area that we need to make sure that we have our procedures and protocols in place. If a drone happens to inadvertently land at the 50-yard line, you know, how do we handle that type of a situation? So, you know, again, there's many different avenues, but we need to take a look at, of course. But certainly, you know, kind of looking at your stadium, you know, from top to bottom and doing your walkthroughs and understanding the familiarity of how to lead people to safety. You know, it's interesting when I opened the Barclays Center, my manager said to me, you know, literally, here's the keys to the building. I'll see you in 4 hours. And I knew exactly what he meant. He wanted me to kind of discover every nook and cranny of that building so that in the event of a true emergency, I would know how to lead people to safety, Troy. And I think it's the same with college sports. You know, whether it's Texas A&M or UT or UCLA, when you have 80, 85, 100,000 people, your event staff, you know, those student volunteers, they need to know, you know, who to speak to in times of crisis. They need to know where the exit signs are. They need to do those walkthroughs of the stadiums before, you know, the crowds show up. They need to look at, you know, the screening procedures, the importance of, you know, not making sure that we don't have, bottlenecks and choke points. We have more than, you know, one entryway into a stadium. We need to study what we do right, what we do wrong. If you look at, you know, obviously Paris, I mean, who knows, maybe that would have been a test to see how security reacted. Certainly, you know, in that situation, Troy, you know, sheltering in place with the president of France, literally in the venue, was deemed the correct risk mitigation strategy. But who's to say that, you know, they wouldn't try, terrorist groups wouldn't try to do something similar and wait for people to come out on the egress and cause mass collateral damage. So we have to look at both sides of the coin, and we have to look at things from many, many different perspectives. And we have to do, you know, obviously these threat and vulnerability assessments. We have to continue to train. We have to do our tabletop exercises. You know, two groups that I've, you know, been working with, the NCS4 and the IAVM, talk about, you know, whether it's, you know, softer target, obviously the Boston Marathon bombing was certainly a hardened target. You know, we have to continue to train. And, you know, I've been at this for quite some time. And to me, this is a highly disciplined niche market within the sports entertainment vertical, which, again, you know, I'm trying to do my part. But there's so many of us, you know, that are committed to the cause of studying and researching and training constantly, Troy, bringing our A-plus games, you know, to the stadiums, venues, and arenas on a daily basis.
Well, you mentioned Paris, and I think Paris is interesting because they didn't actually get through to the stadium part of it. The terrorists didn't. But because there was a music venue down the street, they were able to breach that because it didn't have as much security there. And my question is, are we over-preparing in certain areas and then having amphitheaters, say, on that same campus? A lot of, amphitheaters exist, especially in racetracks. So are they as protected, or are they even kind of thought of in the same sense as we think of our big venues?
Well, again, a great question. And as I mentioned earlier, I think we do a terrific job on the inner perimeters. There's no question that we've kind of upped our game in terms of effective screening measures and wanding and metal arches and situational awareness and all that good stuff that we need to do when folks are coming in through different ingress points. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I am concerned about those entertainment zones, those areas that are outside the inner perimeter, where people are congregating, they're having coffee, they're having a good time, but they're, you know, you look at the U.S. Open, the people outside the tennis stadiums that are watching the event on a jumbotron of some sort. What about those areas? Are we doing everything that we can in terms of, you know, traffic control and making sure people, if they're not allowed into certain areas, that they're not given those, you know, access to those points, obviously. So I think we do a good job. Our work continues. I think we do an excellent job on inner perimeters. I think the outer perimeters are areas that we can focus more on. And certainly when we look at the ability of CC television and access control and command centers, Troy, you know, monitoring those exterior perimeters, I think that certainly places us in an excellent position to, again, dispatch security or law enforcement, you know, to those areas to try to mitigate those problem spots on the outside. So inside and out, outside and in, you know, it's a space that, you know, again, we have many, many people in a densely populated area. And some of these, you know, whether it's obviously the Barclays Center, you have mass transit hubs. So you can have certainly people, you know, coming from Nassau County, going to an Islanders game at the Barclays Center, taking the Long Island Railroad and coming up the stairs and entering, you know, the oculus of the Barclays Center, which is what I did during the time that I commuted into Brooklyn when I worked there. What do we do when people come out? You know, how do we space people on the ingress? Are we doing enough of directing people properly to other ingress areas to keep that ebb and flow so we don't have those choke points, we don't have those bottlenecks? We're communicating effectively. We're speaking the same language, certainly on the radio, so everybody understands, you know, what the codes mean and what their responsibilities are to keep that traffic flow moving, to keep people moving in safely and securely, and also as we egress them to understand that, again, as we mentioned earlier, they could have been drinking for 2 or 3 hours. how do we manage that when they're on their way out? Certainly, as I mentioned earlier, what came out of New York and New Jersey, these softer targets are quite concerning. Certainly, in Minneapolis, in malls and things like that, we have large groups of people. But at the end of the day, I think it's, the mantra, see something, say something. We have to let law enforcement know what's going on. If it doesn't feel right, it probably is not right. The integration of technology, Troy, again, those security apps, text something anonymously. If you're inside the ballpark, to have security or guest services or law enforcement go to a certain area, I think is important. But certainly, as I mentioned, we continue to do our work. We do our research. I'm a strong proponent of researching as long as the folks inside the venues understand the importance of implementing the research based on best practices and the continuing challenges that we're seeing. It's probably my biggest uphill battle, quite honestly, as a consultant, as a security expert, is, they understand the importance of doing it. But if you're doing 250, 300 shows a year, you're just trying to get through that show onto the next show. And it's no knock on what they're trying to do. They understand the significance of it. But as I've mentioned in the very first podcast, you don't want to be that test case scenario where everything went wrong and now everyone's looking at you as that, as that organization that maybe, cut corners on security. So to me, it's pennies on the dollar. It's brand protection. Certainly with the French Open now, the professional tennis players understand the importance of heightened security because, again, it's their workplace. So we want to protect them. We want to protect the press. Certainly, we want to protect the fans. We want to protect the ownership groups from inherent liabilities, whether it's the Dodgers, whether it's South by Southwest, whether it's Chicago White Sox. It's any type of situation where they'll put a subject matter expert on the stand and they'll, ask that person, he or she, what their thoughts are. What did that organization do wrong? And based on that person's knowledge, it could certainly, weigh heavily against the organization if they're cutting corners on security. So certainly, as we mentioned, the sports and entertainment industry is a multi-billion dollar juggernaut. But at the end of the day, if there is one type of situation, your brand will be adversely affected and people will not come back to your stadium, venue, and arena. And that's really the message that I'm sharing with the general managers, the ownership groups. They understand it. But this is something, Troy, quite honestly, you can't ask a part-time person who's making $8 to $11 an hour to understand all the things that we understand when we're doing this 24/7. So we have to train these people continuously. We have to test them continuously. We have to share information, best practices, and lessons learned continuously to do everything that we can to keep people safe within the space.
I think people get confused by the word terrorism simply because they think of it like some vast network, like a movie plot or like everything we're talking about is ISIS. What happened in New York was, really a pressure cooker. It was really low res. And we could even be talking about a disgruntled ex who decides to go stalk their girlfriend or ex-girlfriend, at a football game because they happen to geotag on their Facebook that they're there. These things don't have to be of the mindset that everything is a vast terrorist, attack, but instead that they're really low res, but we have to focus on those low res because I think that's what dumbs people down is they kind of feel like it's not going to happen in Nebraska and they don't realize it's every human being has the propensity to do this.
Has propensity. You're absolutely right. And certainly we've been focusing a lot on terrorist organizations throughout the world. But again, it could be a lone wolf scenario. It could be a disgruntled employee who was terminated at halftime, who decides to go out to the parking lot, get a weapon and what have you, and try to get back into a stadium, venue, and arena and take their aggression out on, the manager that just terminated him. So certainly, sharing that information through human resources to let security know that maybe someone will be terminated. I always talk about, every stadium, venue, and arena should have a social media manager monitoring what's being tweeted and posted in Instagram and Vine all throughout the country for particular performers coming to your stadium, venue, or arena to do that homework in advance, Troy, to understand any potential challenges. And certainly, again, the challenges continue, so we don't know. So it could be, lone wolf, as I mentioned. It could be, just somebody who's disenfranchised for whatever reason, and now they want to make a statement for all the wrong reasons you know, at your stadium? How do you handle that person? You know, are you, do you, does your staff have the situational awareness to look for signs of someone who maybe is mentally unstable, or someone who's intoxicated, or someone who has, you know, some type of grievance against your organization because they posted on Facebook an hour earlier that, you know, they were angry at whatever sports club that was. We need to be paying attention to that. We need to share that information with our first responders, and we need to be prepared for those challenges when we're confronted with them.
Well, fantastic stuff, James. Thank you very much for coming back on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Troy, always a pleasure. And again, you're doing a tremendous job, and congratulations again on 700 plus shows. This is my second show with you, but this is a very, very important topic that is going to continue to evolve. And I'm just trying to do my part. And certainly, you know, I'm blessed to be with you now to share my message. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I want everyone to be safe and have a great time. So again, Troy, always a pleasure, and continued success, my friend.
Thank you for listening to the Dow of Sports podcast, focusing on the world of sports business. Download our free iPhone, iPad app in the iTunes App Store, an Android app available in Amazon to listen to the entire archive. Or check out sportsdow.com for more podcasts, blog posts, and videos. All episodes of the Dow of Sports podcast are copyrighted and trademarked.